Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Maria Maria and Other Stories by Maritza K. Rubio. Narrated by Kyla Garcia. Publisher's note. This audiobook may refer to visual elements included in the print and ebook editions of the book. Brujería for Beginners. Before we begin, did you all place your rum and dulces de tamarindo in the doorway? Yes, cigarettes are a fine substitute for cigars, as long as you all remembered to add 3 coins to the offering. We include 3 coins because 3 is the number of the gatekeeper, the number of the Trinity, the number that is the basic DNA of our spiritual world. I can't answer that, Layla. Remember the exhausting and circuitous discussion we had when good or evil came up during the first week of class? The true identity of the gatekeeper is revealed in the advanced class. Today we will work on a group project. No, none of that. Uncross those arms and stop sinking into your seats. On your desks, I have given each of you a supply kit with items chosen specifically for you. We may have a visitor from the Quantum Physics 101 class next door. The instructor and I have an agreement. If that happens, you may be asked to share your scissors and a pencil. Do not share your Greek grease or your velas. These items are your fates. Did everyone bring a ruler? Does everyone have scissors? A piece of paper, X-Acto knife, duct tape, cutting board, bandage, spool of wire, 2-gauge, spool of wire, 8-gauge, copper coil, agua de Florida, agua de rosa, a live pigeon, paraffin block, and tweezers? Check your supply kit to see that you have 1 bag of colored sand, glitter glue, and 2 embroidery needles. I've also brought in an assortment of oils, hierbas, and plants from my own collection. You may use these items to enhance your petition. Please do not use the ammonia or any of the sealed powders without my assistance. Do not touch the vials of mercury. Do not test the sharpness of the knives. Yes, Denise? The difference is the smell. That is usually how you can tell them apart. Yes, you in the back. Lisette, is it? All petitions require payment, and blood is an offering of the highest value. But you should not presume to know the pigeon's purpose. I understand. Well, consider this. Take off your left boot and hold it up for the class to see. Class, do you see the supple chestnut leather that once contained the muscle and mass of a living creature? Without it, your classmate would be barefoot. Without such brutal slaughter, she'd also be hungry and pale. I can smell the chicken cacciatore she had for lunch on her breath, and my one good eye weeps for the cochineals who lost their lives to accentuate her cheekbones. All petitions require sacrifice. Knowing that, ask yourself, each of you, if you can remain in this class. If not, go next door to the physics class. The instructor and I have an agreement. Leave the supply kit on the desk, Lisette. Thank you, and good luck. Everyone else, please remove your rings, crosses, and hairpins if you have not done so already. Turn off your electronic gadgets, except you, Annelisa. I know your anklet always stays on. Come in, sir. You are from the Physics 101 class? Welcome. Take Lisette's seat. Please take her bag of fate. It was meant for you anyway. And let's continue. We will start with Viviana. Everyone, please direct your attention to Viviana and her supply kit. This is a kit for love. As we learned from last week's scrying workshop, several of you share this aim to varying degrees and will have similar items. Javier, can you see from there? Pull in closer so you have a better view. Viviana wants to attract love, a new love, a first love. Yes, sir? You have a question? That is a generous offer. As the only macho in this class, I suspect you will be tempted to exert your charm on all my students. But the purpose of this demonstration is education, not fulfilling your carnal desires. Bibiana's kit includes a hummingbird feather, which I won't pass around. Bibiana, please hold up your piece of wing. The hummingbird is a fierce warrior, an essential ally for someone who is as shy as our Bibiana. I telechatted with Bibiana last night, and was so pleased she allowed me to make an example of her kid for today's lesson. No, not telephone, Layla. Telechat. I'll be brief, since we must submit our petitions before sunset. After crashing our cars in the parking lot of El Super years ago, Bibiana and I retained a psychic bond that germinated from our shared susto. I damaged my lower back, and she offered the name of her acupuncturist, who helped me tremendously. Bibiana was unharmed. Her youth and health are a great armor. But I wanted to reciprocate. I began visiting Bibiana's dreams to coax her into this class so she could develop new friendships and confidence. And now look at her. Hair pulled back and a pretty pink lipstick. Soon she will graduate to a pouty red. Bibiana's pink hummingbird candles should be burned consecutively. She'll light the next one as soon as the previous one is down to its final layer of wax. This ensures a seamless burning petition. After they have burned out, we will inventory Bibiana's suitors and chart the burn pattern of the glass. From there, we will determine if we should follow up with an offering of honey and perfume. Sir, that is an unfortunate attempt at humor. Rehypnol is not an acceptable offering for any divine or human being. Raise your hand the next time you wish to speak. For those who are ready for a more progressed stage of romantic development, a red chuparosa, a red benami, or even a plain red candle yields impressive results. When you write your names on the candle's glass, make sure your name is always on top of theirs. Always. Full birth names preferred. Do not assume the name they tell you is true, especially in this town. Candlework is futile without the correct address. You have the most experience with illicit botany, Annalisa, but I wouldn't recommend it to anyone else. You're married, yes? Then I suppose toloache would be feasible to administer daily in liquid form, provided the dose is exact. Jimson weed class. Jimson weed. Distilled and dropped into a coffee cup. Yes, or vodka. Can make men docile and bring them to a perpetual amorous state. I asked you to raise your hand rather than interrupt, but yes, you are correct. It is absolutely fatal. Class, we will learn about the Datura species and other potent plants after we return from spring break, but for now you can inspect an example of toloache there on my desk. It is the bell-shaped flower next to the vials of mercury. Toloache is a relative of belladonna, the plant Victorian women used to distill and drop into their eyes to make them dilated and seductive. Don't use belladonna in your eyes. The drops will make you blind and dead. No, Denise, I do not recommend you utilize toloache in any of its forms. All that candlework we've been doing will be lost if you are accused of murder. Have faith that your petition will be heard and toloache will not be needed. When is the hearing? The Santa Marta La Dominadora candle included in your kit needs to burn for 7 days. Be sure to start tonight. I have also included Jabón Justo Juez for her to bathe with before her court date, and a Tapaboca candle to silence her scheming brother-in-law. This is in addition to the doom candle I am burning on Denise's soon-to-be ex-husband. I brought in 2 spent doom candles to show you all how much has changed since the beginning of the semester. Yes, Layla. D-U-M-E, not D-O-O-M. They are pronounced the same, and if used correctly, will have the same effect. This solid black one is from when Denise and I first started working together, right after her most recent visit to the emergency room. All soot and ash. Who can tell me what that means? Correct. Obstacles. And this one? This one is from last week. See how the glass has only a pale gray shadow along the top rim? Now that the candle has burned clear, I am confident that with or without the court, Denise will finally see justice. I would not call it that. Calling it black magic is devoid of context. I would call it spiritual vigilantism, or expedited karma. Denise's soon-to-be ex-husband has expended a significant amount of violent energy and accrued a bottomless psychic debt. Conversely, Denise has acquired a sizable cache of psychic credits she can spend without causing harm to herself or her loved ones. Denise, please raise your arm for the class to see. 13 stitches. She may balance the books any way she chooses. I agree, Layla. Spiritual vigilantism requires a proper class all its own. I submitted a proposal for a semester-length course, but because your community college administrators have decided to invest your tuition in repaving the parking lot instead of your education, it is unlikely the class will be offered. And even if an advanced class is approved, I will only be accepting a limited number of students, specifically chosen by me. I am sorry, but none of you will be invited. No, Bibiana, that is not why. I know you are all intelligent and capable students. Intelligence and capability are not the issue. The issue is the cost. The darkness demands a payment that strips the protective layer of your spirit and invites pain and harm in unexpected manifestations. You might be emboldened by a flirtation with vengeful spirits to torture cruel men in their sleep, the way they tortured you in yours. You may exchange favors with tricksters, learn the language of demons. All of this is fine and fun, until you fall in love with someone who does not love you. In fact, he despises you for what you did to his brother. Stubborn and impulsive, you might send reckless forces to rip him away from his beloved. Maybe you will force him to love you for all eternity. Maybe his devotion will curdle to dependence. Maybe all that time spent in his arms and under his gaze will feel like a cage, and you'll dig your nails into his back, hoping to pierce through his heart, and whoops, here come the three kids you didn't really want. Escape is found in strangers, in dancing across scuffed red floors with cheap Christmas lights overhead, and amplifying your own power as you move your hands and hips all over Los Angeles while he stays at home, caring for the hairless creatures you made together. Your children will despise you. They will grow up to be despised themselves. That will break your heart. His death will break your heart. Your herbs won't fix it. The candles won't fix it. The polvitos and the blood won't fix it. Abandoned by your saints and demons, your most desperate petition will finally be accepted by a spirit more restless and wild than you. You'll be granted an opportunity for redemption by sharing your cursed knowledge with those in need and providing shelter and affection to homeless and neglected cats. There's always a price for conjuring in darkness. You won't always know what it is until payment is due. Now, what can you tell me about the Anima Sola? Thank you, Javier. I can always count on you to do the required reading. The Anima Sola, that lonely soul chained to the bottom of purgatory, surrounded by the eternal flames of her unrequited love, is the focus of your group project this afternoon. Before invoking the Anima Sola, understand that she is a powerful force to harness. She is the middle ground. Not dark, not light. She strains her arms for salvation, not dead, not alive. She is permitted to make brief visits to our earthly world to inflict insomnia and obsessive thoughts on your lovers, enemies, and everyone in between. She is demanding. She is relentless. She will be with us soon. Other questions? No. You will never learn how to raise the dead, not even in the advanced class. Security reasons, Layla. You are right, Bibiana. While you cannot wake the dead, it is always important to honor them. Have you all been keeping up with your altars? Cleanliness and the disposal of offerings is important. No, sir. We do not discuss that in this class. Spike, is it? Well, the answers you are looking for are found in a chemistry or anatomy class, but your instructors would find that line of questioning disturbing. Class is almost over. Our time together is almost up. Let's have a look at your kit, yes? Ah, you have the Gato Negro kit. Black cats are magnificent creatures and full of spirited energy. Class, this is a perfect opportunity for me to point out the folded-up sheet of paper that is included in everyone's supply kit. If any one of you is interested in learning more about black cats, please pay special attention to that form. I run the Behemoth Foundation, a black cat rescue group, and foster anywhere from 4 to 12 stray black cats at any given time. If you would like to adopt a little panther for yourself, or just want to volunteer for their care, please fill out the application included in your supply kit and return to me before the end of class. Be sure to indicate which days are best for an in-house inspection, and sign your approval for a comprehensive background check. I'm a widow. What's that got to do with anything? That's a lazy stereotype. I rarely have more than 12 cats in my house at one time. Class, Mr. Spike's kit includes a black cat candle. Black cat candles help us realize our wildest dreams and most intense desires. Is that another attempt at a joke or a confession? I will remind you that our campus security is sparse but vigilant. Annalisa, put down the X-Acto. Bibiana, stay close to Annalisa. This kit also includes a bundle of sage to clear negativity and evil spirits. We also have a red blindfold, a black ball gag, and 2 industrial trash bags. Oh, look at this! You also have a small laminated portrait of Sin Luz, one of my dearest companions. I found him in a rainstorm, wet, hungry, and trembling. I ask you this as a kindness, Spike. Has anyone ever laughed at your jokes? What's that supposed to mean? You're out of line. You need to calm down. Calm down. What's that in your hand? Sit down. Where'd you get that hook? That wasn't in the supply kit. That wasn't in the supply kit. Mujeres, the wire, the needles, the rope coiled around each of your chairs. Javier, bring me the toloache and mercury. Bibiana, lock the doors. Open your eyes. Unclasp your hands, but remain in the circle. Give yourselves a moment to readjust to the candlelight. Deep breaths. Class, you have all excelled in today's group project. I am impressed by your precision and calm. Be proud of what we have accomplished together. My vow to the Anima Sola is now fulfilled. Your petitions paid. My gatos assured a feast. All that is left for you to do is release your pigeons before sunset. Be sure to truly want what you ask for because you will receive it. It will come in doses or in one rush of fortune. Those are things I can't tell you, and you can't expect to know. There are mysteries. There are mysteries. Light your white candle before you fall asleep tonight, and wish the Anima Sola well on her journey, finally free and untethered. She will remain sympathetic, but not obligated to attend to your needs. Grateful, but not indebted. Never attempt to summon the classmate who we've condemned to take La Anima Sola's place. No one can call him. No one knows his true name. The instructor and I have an agreement. I'll see you all when we return from spring break. Extra credit points for anyone who brings in cascarones. Uncracked, Leila. The eggshells definitely need to be uncracked. No, Javier. Nothing to do with Easter, or Ostara, or the equinox. Extra credit because cascarones are my favorite thing of this world. That satisfying crunch, and the rainbow confetti polka-dotting the cement. All of us screaming and laughing and being sneaky without spite. Everything is possible. And no one is afraid. Shizuka.
Ada melted down her antique filigree necklace and a tangled knot of chains into a thin sheet of pliable gold. She hammered and molded the metal into a precise airtight cap that would seal off what remained of Armand's neck. The inside of her decapitated husband's head contained an avocado pit, orange seeds, kumquat peels, and dried tendrils of a passion flower vine. A poultice of fragrant lavender in the right eye, rose petals and honeysuckle in the left. Ada poured in sugar crystals to fill the remaining empty space of his skull. Finally, she pressed the gold cap against Armand's cold flesh, searing it shut. She wiped the flecks of dirt and sugar from her hands on an embroidered dish towel and rubbed her knees, which ached from kneeling in her backyard garden for so long. She looked at her dead husband's face. The jade studs embedded in his ears glowed in the moonlight. Ada thought he resembled an oversized brooch, the kind a conquistador's wife might have worn to impress her friends. Tiny black hairs sprouted from the top of his bald head like on the belly of a pig. They prickled Ada's palms as she lowered him into her ostrich skin tote bag. Also inside her ostrich tote, a plastic baggie of dirt from Armand's hometown, his instructions, and an unframed family portrait. Their children had refused to see her off. They didn't attend the funeral either. The last time they visited their father, the last time they tried to convince him his wishes were disgusting, maybe even illegal, Ada had sensed them silently appraising and claiming their dying father's belongings. Armand, one eye in this world and one in the other, had seen it too. In a hoarse whisper, he instructed Ada to cut holes in all her silk scarves and nick all the crystal.
"Everything else," he said, "give away."
She wouldn't need any of those old things in their new home. The jungle was no place for antiques. Ada kissed his forehead and agreed. The jungle was no place for antiques. Armand died after his merienda. Ada held his hand as he settled in for his afternoon nap. She knew he was gone when she felt his hand go limp and lose its warmth. As soon as Armand died, so did Ada the wife. She was now Ada the executor, executing her husband's instructions efficiently and accurately. First task on the list, call Tomas, the brujo/immigration attorney Armand had hired to guide Ada through the transition process. Tomas arrived at the house just before sunset with a pair of girls clinging to his legs.
"Mis nietas," he explained. "I couldn't leave them alone. They will behave."
He gave them a look and they sat on the floor, quiet and still. After confirming Armand was dead, Tomas pulled a gleaming machete from his duffel bag. He handed the blade to Ada and said,
"I'll wait for you outside."
As the streetlights flickered on, Ada and Tomas wrapped Armand's head with hoja santa and white petals before burying it in the backyard birria pit. While the head cured, Ada sat on her teal velvet chair and watched as Tomas and the granddaughters wrapped the headless body in white silk. She dug her fingers into the chair's soft fabric and felt a tickle of resentment in her throat. Armand wanted his head to be buried in the rich dirt of the Shizuka forest, surrounded by the fertile wild. Ada had promised she would stay with him there in the wild jungle until the end of her life, and it was a promise she never intended to keep. Who would know? Before boarding the plane to Brazil, Ada arranged for her teal chair and mahogany nightstand and the crystal champagne flutes and her mother's gold candle snuffer and one wardrobe case and one accessory case and two shoe cases and the boxes and boxes of photo albums to be transported to a condo in a thriving senior living community in San Diego. Her children could tear each other's hair out for everything else. Ada's new condo had a crescent-shaped balcony with an ocean view, and the meals were certified organic. On Wednesdays, they had yoga. Ada arrived in Rio de Janeiro just after sunrise. An air-conditioned private car picked her up at the airport. The driver gave his condolences but didn't ask any questions. Slowly, the car climbed up a hill through winding, narrow roads lined with plywood houses and corrugated metal roofs. Ada craned her neck to peer at the towering soapstone Christ overlooking Rio. She followed the statue's gaze to see she was surrounded by infinite ocean and the charcoal shadows of mountains. Leaves and branches whipped across the car's steel body and windows when it turned onto an unpaved road. Ada closed her eyes to keep herself from getting sick. The driver took note and reduced the speed to a gentle roll. After an hour of languid navigation through the dense trees, the car stopped in front of a small brick house. Ada's leopard print kitten heels sank into the dirt as the driver helped her out of the back seat. A sudden swarm of hot pink butterflies flew up in front of Ada's face, temporarily blinding her. Ada wobbled on her heels, and the driver effortlessly picked her up and carried her inside the house. He silently showed Ada the closets where her belongings were stored, the pantry full of food, the sprawling backyard jungle. He handed her the keys and kissed her cheek before turning to leave, closing the door behind him. Ada was alone. The 14-hour flight, the anxiety of flashing the customs agents the hand signal taught to her by Tomas, the shock of everything going as planned. Her muscles twitched with relief. She set her bag on the wooden dresser and opened it to check on Armand. His skin had gained a suppleness it never had when he was alive. Tomas said that might happen. She unfolded the instructions and drew a line through the task she'd completed. She then peeled the protective plastic off the bed's soft comforter and stretched out on the cool cotton sheets, sore and exhausted. The following morning, Ada stood under the hot running water of the shower. It was covered in the same Talavera tile Armand had embedded in their kitchen floor. Ada let the water fall over the white roots of her dyed auburn hair until the heat ran out. She pressed her wet face against the cold, hard tile, seeking the heartbeat of her husband. Humming a song she'd never heard before but recognized as the sound of her grief, she turned off the water and stepped out of the shower. She wrapped a thick navy towel around her body and, out of habit, dabbed perfume on her wrists and behind her ears before getting dressed. The backyard was limitless. The sunlight beamed through a thicket of emerald leaves, and the ground felt like a sponge underneath her feet. Following the instructions, Ada dug a 2-foot hole in the backyard.
Don't you mean 2-head hole?
Ada laughed at the joke her dead husband would never make. When she finished digging, Ada sprinkled the dirt from Armand's desert hometown into the earth. She held her husband in her lap and stared at his transformed face. She rubbed her thumb across his cheek. Her speckled hands looked like cracked pottery against Armand's rejuvenated flesh. Tomas warned Ada that true courage would be demanded right at this moment.
Customs, immigration, their dogs, none of that matters, Tomas said. You are the greatest threat to your husband's final wish.
Ada, the wife, felt her throat close up. The preparations and chaos of the journey were merciful distractions. Now, alone in the forest, under the scrutiny of the jungle's suspiciously silent birds, Ada imagined keeping him, sleeping with him, talking with him. As long as she held him in her palms, he was still with her. Ada pressed her lips against his forehead for a final kiss. Then, carefully, she peeled the hammered gold cap from Armand's neck. The heat was unforgiving. Immediately, the flesh around his neck became gummy, and his hair began to curl and clump. Ada felt the rigidity of his jawbone bowing under pressure from her fingers. Ada the executor returned, and she planted Armand's head in the earth, neck first. She shoveled the damp dirt over her husband's softening skull and packed it down flat with her hands. The instructions were specific. Wait 2 weeks until traveling again. Ada the widow was anxious to leave, but knew her body wasn't ready for another long trip. She obeyed this last task without resistance, taking short walks into the jungle every morning before the rains came. She watched the capuchin monkeys chase each other and admired the spontaneous orchids that grew out of the sides of trees. She mistook a flamboyant spider for a flower and tried to pick it for her wooden nightstand.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?